God, we want to see that with more power. We want to see your kingdom, your preferred way that the world operates, coming with increased regularity. And we also want to see what our role is in that with increased clarity. And I'm hoping that by the end of today, with increased involvement, engagement by individuals who've been sitting in this big dark room all weekend. So help my words to be clear, most importantly. Help all that happens today to be in alignment with the perspective and character of your son, Jesus. Amen. You know, when I was a little kid, hey, let's thank these guys, by the way. How good is that? Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well, when I was a little kid, many of you might have learned this as little kids, or if you're still a little kid, at least mentally, you might just be learning this now. You know, the old thing, here's the church, or here's the steeple, open the doors and look at all the people, right? All the people. We're in this series talking about what is the local church, and specifically this local church called Crossroads. There's great local churches that are all over the city, all over the country, that have different visions, different perspectives, but we're looking at why it is we do what we do. What's going on here today? And that nice little thing that I learned was really inaccurate. We talked last week about how we really shouldn't say, though we do say, and I still say it, going to church. Church is not a thing that you go to. Church is not a building. It's not a structure, whether an auditorium or a traditional chapel. Church is the people. What are the people doing? And when I was in seminary, I learned a couple terms. One was church invisible versus church visible. And what that meant was, even if you happen to go to a place, quote unquote, go to a church, you might be part of the church visible. Let's say that you carry a Bible. Let's say that you have certain moral or spiritual characteristics about you. Let's say even you outwardly say that you follow Jesus, you'd be part of the church visible, but yet there's also the church invisible, which means that none of us really know the condition of anybody's heart. Only God knows that. You can look like you're saying all the right things. You can look like you're doing all the right things. You might be part of the visible church, but only God knows that. Only God knows the condition of our heart. And then I also learned in seminary this term, the church militant. Church militant, meaning the church is to be an onward advancing army to build into and go after this world to bring love to this world. Militant is a very negative term generally in our society, especially as applied to religion, because unfortunately people who have been religious and who have aligned themselves with Jesus have been violent. That's not the kind of militancy we're talking about. We're not talking about violent militancy, and we're not talking about judgmental militancy, but we are talking about being a part of a movement, being a part of something that's going someplace to actually change the world. So in the first week, we talked about our vision statement. We connect seekers to a community of growing Christ followers who are changing the world. Outside in. Outsiders, seekers who are not part of Crossroads, don't believe in the Bible, not understanding who we are. When I say we, I'm not talking about every individual and every individual person in here, because we have all different faith perspectives, all different backgrounds in here. When I say we, I'm talking about those of us who understand the vision of this church and are making it happen. Outside in, people on the outside coming inside a place like this to be challenged and helped. Then once you're in, people who are on the inside working on the inner world of us, growing Christ followers, environments where there's seekers and growing Christ followers who are actually advancing, who are actually going someplace. And then finally today, we're looking at who are changing the world. We believe that we are, and we have actual proof, we're going to talk about some of it today, that we are literally changing the world. You are a part of something that is changing the world, including the world and the house in which you reside, maybe the thought life or the patterns of practices that are happening in your world or in your neighborhood, and actually changing things across the whole globe. We're going to talk a bit about India today. And in India, in any place where there is an onward marching army, there are front lines and back lines, and actually Crossroads. Crossroads is a focused and growing army. Crossroads is a focused and growing army. Focused. When you look at those community life brochure today, or community groups, you can see all those different groups in there. There's a lot of stuff offered in there, but there's not as much as could be. We could do a lot more. And in fact, when we do things, whether it's India or South Africa, and primarily our main bread and butter is right here within our own city, we get requests all the time of things to do, checks to write, things to support, things to announce, and we regularly say no. We say no way, way, way more than we say yes because we want to be focused. We're not just trying to do a lot of stuff. We're trying to be very focused on some certain things. We're a focused army. William Shatner, in his book Up Till Now, which I've been reading, pretty interesting read, even though I'm not a Star Trek geek, he says this about his focus as an actor. He says, I'm concerned about being overexposed, so I've been very careful to limit myself to acting on the stage and in dramatic television programs, hosting documentary-type programs and game shows, appearing in movies and commercials, endorsing products, doing voiceovers, charity appearances, radio programs, webcast videos, Star Trek conventions, game shows, horse shows and dog shows, writing books and songs, making albums, creating, directing, and producing television programs, performing at concerts and appearing on talk shows, competitive reality-type shows, and award programs. But that's where I draw the line. For example, I rarely do bar mitzvahs, and I've never worked in the Catskills. Oh, man, very, very funny. You know, we have focus around here. We do very few things, but we want to do it big. We want to really get engaged with it. So with South Africa, you know, our focus was enabling us to put on a roof on a facility, now build the largest privately funded AIDS hospice, now continue to build onto that work there while we have people who are actually there on the front lines right now. In India, over the last 2 years, we put about $500,000 into supporting and partnering with International Justice Mission, who is rescuing girls out of forced prostitution slavery, who are in slavery, and now in the aftercare process of how would we nurture kids that way. We put millions in local Cincinnati economy over the last couple of years, operating and building an infrastructure that fuels things like WizKids, doing with CityLink, all kinds of stuff of helping people who are in the city, go to Cincinnati, all of these things. We do a few things, but we want to really focus on them and have massive impact. And the great thing is, because our army is growing, we're able to do more and more. 800 people signing up. That is awesome. That is phenomenal. That's great. That means we have more redemptive potential to build into the world. See, I've never been to India. I'm not on the front lines of India, but I am in the fight against child sex slavery. I am in the fight of rehabilitating and loving on girls because I'm in the back lines. Everything I do here is somehow building into our impact of being able to do that. Every army has very few people on the front lines, very few people who are actually holding rifles in the line of fire, and the preponderance is the back lines and support line. Every single military is that way. And I feel like because I'm part of this thing called Crossroads, I can say, yes, I'm fighting slavery. I'm not just talking about it. I'm not philosophizing about it. I'm not petitioning the government to send more tax dollars over to South Africa. I'm engaged with it. I'm actually making that happen. And all of us who are part of this thing get to make that happen. Now, let me just connect the dots on this offering piece that we did earlier. And I definitely wanted to hit this piece after the offering so you didn't think I was trying to spike up our offering numbers today. But you know, this is why that's an important thing. It's important for us to give opportunity to be generous. It's important for outsiders who are in or people who are really not involved in seeing God's redemptive power in the world to be able to receive and just not feel like you need to kind of put something in. That's why we always want to have that disclaimer. But it's also why we want to exclaim to all of us who do give a preset percentage of our income. It's a priority, and we write checks why we do this. And some of us do that. It's very important. Others of us are in more of a cash position, and we do that cash-wise to engage in that way. Others of us, when the bag passes by, you know, you do nothing because for years now you've been a freeloader. You take the pass. You take the pass all the time. Like, oh, yeah, I'm guessing. I'll let that pass on by. And, you know, it gets really bothersome because you're living off the generosity. You're just sucking down all of our free coffee and HVAC while you really aren't engaged. You say you're part of CrossFit, but you're really not. You're really not. I just want to kind of say it the way it is. That's the way it is. See, for me, based on how we order our finances, I always feel bad when I'm here attending and a bag passes by because I'm sort of cashless. I do a lot of plastique, so I don't have a lot of cash on me. And even though I do have cash on me, things aren't important to me. For me personally, I just throw cash at it. throw a few bucks here, a few bucks there. But it's the real important things that I and others in here as well who let the bag pass by and don't put anything in, I and some others do giving electronically. When I want to get serious about savings, if I, for me, don't do it electronically, I never save. I just throw a few bucks at savings at the end of the month. Guess what? Nothing gets saved. If I just want to pay down my mortgage, not give money to the bank. No, I am paying. I am enslaved to the bank. If I do that, I've got to make sure it's a priority. It's a financial priority, and I am electronically doing that. There's a system. If I'm serious about college education, anything, I got to do that. And so a lot of us, that is a major priority for us because we want to be a part of something that has changed the world. We are literally changing the world. A buddy of mine used to be on the outside. When I first met him, we played basketball together. He was on the outside, wasn't involved in a church, had very cynical about the Bible, all that stuff. Through relationship with him, he started coming here, ended up receiving Christ, ended up, he's out on the inside, he's growing, very, very cool stuff. And he's been engaged with what's happening over in Mama Lodi. And there's a test site that we're working on before it gets unveiled to everybody, which is an ongoing blog and updating of some of the stuff that's happening there that you'll be able to get into when it's ready. But he got a sneak peek at it, and he sent me this email I thought was pretty cool, which is the way many of us should feel right now. He said this. He said, oh, there it is. He said, hey, I just got an email from Jason with his blog and pictures. It was awesome. I've never been prouder that some of my 10% is going to support such a great group of people working with God. He's on the supply lines. I am. All of us are. All of us are on the front lines of some elements. Some of us are on the front lines of raising the next generation in Kids Club. I don't serve in Kids Club. I'm on the supply lines of helping in various ways. But what's happening is we are amassing more and more people that can be a blessing to the world and impact the world. And I want to tell you, those of us who are on that, let's reclarify our perspective and know that we are tangibly, concretely making a difference. We're not just talking about it. We're not just praying about it. We're not just thinking about it. We are doing it. In South Africa, for instance, you know, the highest levels of the government are aware of this thing called Crossroads in Cincinnati. We've sent, I believe, this is a big statement, but it's kind of cool to say, we've sent more than any other organization in the history of the world more people to South Africa than has ever been sent. And that's why what's being happening there is intense. That's why the AIDS stuff, the medical clinics being worked on, all kinds of stuff is actually gaining prominence and other people are noticing. That's why Titus and that church that we're in partnership received a national award last month because of their work there and the partnership. This is fun. And why is this? Why are we an army that's bent not on destruction, but on construction? Why are we an army that's focused on that? It's because that's the focus and the mandate that we find in the Bible. We want to be a blessing. God's people are called to bless. God's people are called to bless. We're not called to be violent. We're not called to be judgmental. We're not called to say, you're wrong, I'm right. We're called to be a blessing. And it's a bummer when most local churches or Bible-carrying people are viewed as an annoyance instead of a blessing, are viewed as, you know, a judgmental, non-loving thing, or viewed as just anal tight butts that got sticks stuck in various orifices of your body. I mean, that's it. Well, why is it that people who read the Bible and go to churches have that as a reputation? That's not the Bible I read. That's not the mandate I see when I read the Bible. In fact, one of the original teams or battalions, if you will, that God called together was the nation of Israel. In the book of Genesis, chapter 12, God gives them this mandate when he speaks with Abraham, who's the point person of the nation of Israel. Here was the original mandate for the nation of Israel. It says this: I will make you into a great nation, and I'll bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. Any group that comes together in God's name should be a blessing. And we are called to be a people. Crossroads is called to be a blessing. Let me tell you one of the coolest things that I found out recently. I love this. By the way, this is why the multi-site strategy is so core to who we are. We have a campus in Oakley. We have a campus in Mason. We're continuing to open up campuses all over the region because there are people who are on the outside in those areas that need a convenient place to go to be challenged and comforted and grown. And as that happens, We have a larger, more cohesive army that is able to do larger and more cool things. That's why we're serious about doing different campuses all over the region. So at our Mason campus, I found this thing out the other day, which is just very, very cool. Who knows what ESL stands for? There's our English as a secondary language. I've been Captain Clueless. I've never heard of ESL at all. I've heard of ED. I've never heard of ESL ever. I don't even know where that came from. I get punchy after four of these things. That's 11:45, so whatever. I've never ESL, English as a second language. Never heard of it before until I found out what some of our team, one of the battalions of ours up in Mason, did. Apparently, it's a growing issue, even in Mason schools, which you would think is a somewhat monochromatic school district, and it isn't. There are increasing numbers of students there that English is their second language. Arabic, a large Arabic population where Arabic is the primary language, or Spanish, or German. And so teachers are noticing there's problems that are happening during the school year because the kids just can't keep up. And so many of these teachers are giving of their time in the summer to tutor children in how to do English. And because we've been building into that school and have a presence, they approached somebody who's a crossroads up in Mason and said, would you have any ability to make lunches? So it'd be easier for the kids to focus and it'd just be easier for everybody. Assuming that if some church people got involved, maybe the least they could do was do some peanut butter and jelly. You know, like put some peanut butter on there and some jelly. No. That's not the way we don't roll like that around here. That doesn't happen. These folks, whoever's up there leading that thing, they said, sure, we'll take that on. And apparently the spread was crazy ridiculous all summer long. A major blessing to the kids, major blessing to the teachers, filtrated out throughout the school system, actually came up at a school board meeting. And actually it was a point that one of the school board members brought this up, thanked us as a team, and the school board gave Crossroads a standing ovation. I said, let me tell you, I've been around boards. Boards don't give standing ovations, especially school boards to churches. Folks, that is awesome. That is awesome. That is utterly phenomenal. It's just one little micro example of how we want to be an army of construction. We want to bless your house, your dating relationship, your school, your business, your country, your city, your world. We're a mass for a specific calling in these areas. And we feel like this has to happen, not just because we need to bless, and it's modeled for us in the Bible, but because also Jesus commissioned us to do that. Christ followers are commissioned to go. We have go Cincinnati, go New Orleans, go Mamelodi. For too long. We're in the research phase of it right now. We've had little pockets of people being deployed to India who are doing research and development of what the next level is for us to do there. Did I mention $500,000? Yes. Yes? Okay. I'm sorry. Again, I'm sorry. This is number four. I say different things every single one, and I just forget about them, and every service gets something that somebody else didn't get, and I felt like that was, you know, important one to say. So, eventually, there'll be go Mumbai. But where do we get that? Why is it go? Go this, go that, go all these go things. Well, it's because of what Jesus said with the commission. He said this, one of the last things he did before he left the earth. He said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. Jesus was God in the flesh. He was God in the flesh. He was God who took on flesh, and therefore all authority had been granted to him. And this is the crazy thing. He says, as I depart, my authority, I'm going to give to you as the local church. I'm going to give to you as my disciples. You have my authority. So if there's a problem in the world, yes, pray about it, but you got to go about it. Yes, pray about it. Yes, petition your government to be involved with it perhaps because your tax dollars are there. But you are the primary authority figures. Go. I am commissioning you to go. Understand, this is radical and this is one of a kind. Cracks me up and kind of bums me out when people say things that shows that they just haven't done a lot of study. When people say all religions are the same, you just go, man, you don't really know a lot about religions, do you? Haven't looked at those suckers. Hinduism. Hinduism doesn't go. Why? Because in that system, when there's a problem in the world or in your life, it's because karma is playing out. We use the word karma just kind of a pithy little punchline in various situations. But karma is part of the overall system of Hinduism, which says that you and I are born in debt. You're born in debt based on your previous life. And so the way you live this life will determine your karma. You will either come into the next life in greater debt or in less debt. And so that's why there aren't Hindu hospitals that have started. It's because we shouldn't mess with karma or the cosmic justice system of let somebody else work out their own poverty issues. That's why when Mother Teresa goes into Calcutta, there's virtually nothing happening there at all. And she turns heads because people are like, I'm not sure if you should help orphans. Now, obviously there's Hindus who don't operate this way, but this is the Hindu system. It is entirely opposed to Jesus says, no, make that your problem. Go, go. The Hindu system is the caste system. That says, hey, you have all these different layers, and ne'er shall the twain mix. Jesus says, not only should you have genuine friendships of somebody who's at a different economic and racial environment than you are, but I'm telling you, Jesus says, go to other countries, go. In the Buddhist system, you don't go, you deny that evil exists. Evil is an illusion. Evil and sin doesn't really there. You just got to get to a higher level of consciousness and see that it is not real. It is unreal. This is the Buddhist system. That's the way it is. You don't see Buddhists going in and having efforts, cohesive efforts, to rescue children out of child sex slavery. Individual Buddhists might have a heart for that, might do that, but the overall Buddhist system is entirely different than the Jesus system. New Age spirituality, which is very popular in our country and actually in our community in Crossroads, entirely different from what Jesus talked about. Some good things there, some nice things. Some people of us who are New Age spiritualists will definitely have a heart and want to go someplace, but what's the basis for that? What's the basis? And there really is not in the New Age movement a cohesive strategy to go after things other than peace dances. You know, hey man, I think that has a point where that just doesn't work. There's not enough teeth to that. We're commissioned to go, and God gives different marching orders, different territories, different groups of people to go after, and we know what our marching orders are. We put seekers and community of growing Christ followers together, and we go after problems that God is calling us to. Normal, everyday people. I want to invite one of those normal, everyday people up on stage right now. His name is Todd Bretz. Why don't you welcome Todd Bretz up here to our stage. Come on up here, Todd. Man, I'm getting all fired up. I'm talking loudly and quickly, so I'm glad to use your vocal cords for a change. Well, tell us a little bit, Todd, about who you are, how you got here to this thing called Crossroads.
Okay. I grew up going to a Methodist church. To be honest, I was forced to go by my parents. They would wake me up every Sunday morning, drag me to church. I would kind of sit there, feel worse when I left than when I got there, listening to the message. So I definitely, the whole Jesus and church thing was not resonating for me.
Like, that's probably so true. Most of us who have church backgrounds, that most of us, that was our thing. We were dragged there, and it was just a bummer. That's why it's so crazy when parents get guilted into going to church because their kid's crying because they want to go to kids' club.
Right.
That happens here. That does. It's like kids get in the doors and they run back there and they cry and whine if parents want to sleep in. That's awesome. That's because it's a blessing to them. So That was your and my background. What happened when you came here and why'd you come and all that stuff?
I had about a 10-year period where I was kind of the Christmas and Easter church guy. I would go with my family. So 10 years, no Jesus, just kind of living life, doing college kind of thing. And I had a buddy who I was good friends with, who actually still goes here. He's like, dude, he's like, Crossroads and Hyde Park Kroger, where we're going to meet girls. I'm like, sweet. So we would go grocery shopping.
I wonder, are there any guys in here that are looking for girls? Stand right now. If you're a guy right now that is looking for a little lady, why don't you just stand right now so we can recognize you? You all lie. How about ladies? This is your opportunity. Any ladies here want to be seen right now? Just go ahead and stand. We'll do a little speed dating right now. Hey, ladies. I'm surprised. I thought 11:45 would sort of be real.
And I do. I have to add, this is a 11:45 special that I'm about to give right now. I would never make it before 11:45 because I was usually up partying the night before. So I would sit up in that little corner right there. I don't know if you guys know what's right outside the doors. The restrooms are right outside the doors up there. So this is not probably one of my more proud moments, but just to kind of tell you how I was, I would actually sit in the back row in case I needed to go to the restroom because I had been out drinking too hard the night before.
That's awesome. No, I don't mean it's awesome that, you know, you had to go and blow cookies in the middle of church service, but I mean it's, but I do mean, honestly, it is awesome that that's the place where many of us are right now, and yet you're here to be challenged and grown, and we are an environment that is conducive for everybody at every different place of life. That's really cool.
And that the thing for me was coming here, I didn't feel judged. I didn't feel like I was a bad person. I just needed somebody to kind of help me along. So I started coming here for a few months, and I mean, every time I came here, like after a few times of coming here, I kind of started to change, and I felt this nudge, like, just go, and like I was seeking, and so I came here, and actually, throughout the course of time, I volunteered in Kids Club. I had met my soon-to-be wife at that point, so she had straightened me out enough that I was okay to be around your children at this point. There is an application process. They don't just let some drunk guy come in on the street.
Hey, can't you play about this, Jesus?
So, oh, man. So we did Kids Club, and then we moved to CSM here in Oakley. At this point, my wife had actually, I had invited her to come to church here at Crossroads. And the first service she went to, she had grown up a Christian, like, straight and narrow, awesome, awesome woman. And the first service she came to was when there was money underneath our seats in envelopes. And Brian told us to go out, take this money and go bless people with it. And my wife was like blown away by that. So that, I mean, immediately she was like, okay, she was all in from the first time she came here. So we kind of volunteered together, Kids Club, CSM, Oakley. And then when CSM Mason opened up, we've kind of felt like we were being called to help start the CSM up in Mason, and that's where we are right now in terms of volunteering.
So things are just kind of cruising along. It looks like really amazing stuff. You know, for you to be here to start with is amazing. For you to take nudges and start growing and doing things, awesome. But then something else happened where God gave you a new opportunity.
Yep. My wife, about a year ago, my wife comes to me and she's like, hey, she's like, we're going to sign up to go to Mumbai, India. She's like, go online, fill out the application. And I'm thinking to myself and telling my wife, I'm pretty good here in Cincinnati. I don't need to go to India. I'm not sure what we're going to do there. Like, I'm cool with the CSM students. And she was like, well, she's like, I'm going. So if you would like to be with me, then you'll go too. And I just kind of.
She was more masculine than
correct.
You then.
Yes, she was. All right. And one thing I'd kind of like to hit on that I've struggled with my whole life is fear. Like, I fear of my personal safety when I met my wife, like fear of my wife, like getting in a car accident. Like, if she wouldn't call me, I would like go crazy because I just had this thing with fear. So going to Mumbai for me was facing that fear of something new, something different. I had no idea what I was getting into. So as I'm filling out the application, I'm like online, filling out the application. I'm like, please don't pick me. Please don't pick me. And of course, the way things happen in my life, I was picked to go to Mumbai. So my wife and I started doing the fundraising. We're getting amazing donations from people to help us go on our trip. And I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but around Thanksgiving time of last year, sitting in my office, I work out of my home, and turn on the TV, and on CNN, it's got like a wide angle of the city of Mumbai, and there's gunmen going through the city and murdering people. 180 people were killed, most of which were in Western hotels that Westerners were staying at. Oddly enough, that's where we were staying when we went over to Mumbai. In a couple months, we're in these Western hotels where all these people had just been murdered. So the fear factor came in. I called my wife. I was like, are you watching the news? She's like, no, I'm actually out working. I was like, people are being murdered right now in Mumbai. I was like, we're not going. Like, I'm going to call somebody at Crossroads and say, give us the money back. We'll send it back to the people who donated. I was scared to death about, you know, what was going to happen. And she basically is on the phone. She's like, turn the TV off. Stop being a weenie boy, like Brian likes to call me. She's like, I'm going still. So I haven't watched the news, so I don't really care what's going on over there. She's like, I'm going. If you want to go, that's fine. So she basically just, she was on a mission to go to Mumbai, and if I wanted to go with her, then that was great. If not, she was going to go anyways. So
you went.
So I went. 18-hour plane ride gives you lots of time to think about all the horrible things that could happen as you're going over there. And the end to the fear story is now I'm in a much better place with fear. So if you're thinking what I was thinking, you just got to face it. And it's amazing once you break free of that fear. So anyways, we land in Mumbai. Mumbai, India, I've explained this 4 times, and it still is difficult to explain. If I could bring it down to a couple sentences, it is literally a hell on earth. Poverty like I've never seen before. Just no sanitation service. I mean, garbage is just piled up. It smells. It's loud. There's too many people. But the people we met were just these amazing, like, seeds of light just shooting up through this dark, morbid place. So we spent a week there. Our whole team, like, different groups did different things. My group got to be in one aftercare home where they had rescued 22 girls. 22 girls were living at this aftercare home. And we painted murals. Before we got there, the house was white walls. When we left, there were like, the girls got to pick the colors. So there were like neon orange walls, like highlighter yellow colored walls. We had an amazing group that did murals. So they had like Minnie Mouse and Daisy Duck, I think is her name, like murals and like aquariums, just all kinds of stuff. So we basically went in and just worked on this house. And we also got an opportunity to just spend time with the girls. We didn't want to just get totally wrapped up in painting. So building relationships with the girls was absolutely amazing. And got my fingernails painted by the girls. The girls in our group got their hair done. The girls in our group were braiding the hair of these Indian girls. So it was just an amazing time, awesome relationship building. And then the last night we were there, I remember the date for the rest of my life, it was February 19th of this year. We had somebody in our group ask Sister Lizzie, who runs the home, if we could wash the girls' feet. And as soon as she brought this up, we were just all like, oh my goodness, this is going to be crazy.
Yeah, this is one of the things that Jesus does. It's ridiculous. He's God. He's the ultimate leader. And yet, he lowers himself and washes the feet of normal friends. He takes the role of the servant. He takes the role of the slave, really, in that culture, by washing feet that are caked on with dirt, camel stuff, all that stuff from people walking. That was so radical about that, washing feet. He transcended sort of the caste system by serving. That's why sometimes people, in a symbolic gesture, wash feet. It's a sign of me lowering myself, transcending my own place, and serving. And so to do that in this setting was radical, not just because in the caste system in India, it is huge. You don't go over, if you will, party lines or economic lines or racial lines. You just do not. There's no model for that at all in Hinduism.
Right.
There is with Jesus. So not only that, but there's also the other stuff going on in your mind with that.
Yeah, throughout the whole week, when I first met all the girls, I had this feeling of, how do they look at me? Like, I'm a 30, at the time, 31-year-old Western man. I was the description of the men who had been raping them their whole entire lives. So I had that issue. The women, like, the girls were very touchy-feely with the women. Like, the women were hugging them. For the 4 guys that were on our trip, we were just kind of feeling that out for the whole week. So there was definitely, on our part, I think, we wanted to be mindful of the girls. So, you know, we give, like, high fives and things like that, but there was never, like, any hugging or anything like that. In the Indian culture, it's men and women just don't mix. Like, my wife and I were told that we shouldn't hold hands, like, walking down the street, or we could get, I don't know, beaten up or something. So very different than here. So I was wrestling with that. Once we decided, Sister Lizzie said she was going to, like, she started crying when somebody brought up washing the girls' feet. So we went out in the back, got all the water ready, got, like, little stations set up, and she stayed upstairs with the girls and explained to them what was about to happen. And so we're down on the first floor, and all of a sudden, we can hear 22 girls upstairs start to cry. So, of course, the crying was heard, and then the people downstairs started crying, so he just kind of had a big old feet-washing cry fest. So I ended up, I washed three of the girls' feet, and then they actually washed our feet as well after they had asked us, which I felt a little weird about, but they really wanted to wash our feet, so that happened as well. And it was about an hour, and it was by far, up to this point in my life, the most holy period of time that I've ever had. And I was doing pretty good. Like, I was like, this is awesome. Like, I'm not crying. Like, I can make it through this. And right when, like, the last few girls were up, I was like, uh-oh. Like, I felt this, like, I'm not going to make it. Like, I'm going to start crying. And Brian likes to, I felt myself start to feel that way, so I kind of separated myself from the group. Everybody was in front of me, kind of focused away from me, so I got back to the back, and then I just started bawling. Brian called it the H cry. It wasn't just a... That's the fourth time he's done that. I love it every time. It wasn't just a couple tears running down my face. I was bawling. And then all of a sudden, I thought I was removed from everybody. All of a sudden, from behind, there was a tap on my shoulder. And I turn around, and there's this little girl who had painted my fingernails that day and was teaching us how to do, like, Bollywood dancing, and just the most beautiful girl. And she had tears running down her face and this huge smile. And she just looks at me, and she says, it's okay. And she takes her two thumbs, and she wipes the tears from my eyes, and she's like, it's okay, Todd. She's like, everything's going to be all right. And I was just like, there's no way that just really happened. This little girl who has been raped by people like me, a man who comes from a world of excess, and I can't even imagine the life that she's been through, she's telling me that it's going to be okay. And for me, that was the moment that I met Jesus face to face. As soon as she wiped the tears from my eyes, I was like, I don't care about being mindful of the men and women thing. I just grabbed her, and she grabbed me, and I hugged her. I don't know how long it was for. It seemed like a few minutes, but I could have stayed there forever, like just holding this girl. And I was just sitting there, and I was praying, and I was just like, this has totally changed my life. And on the way back, another 18 hours to think about it, and my wife and I have been totally flipped upside down in the most amazing way since we got back. And
so one of the things that I really like about you and this, and I had Todd, quote unquote, referred to me to do this. I'd never met him before 5 days ago or so ago, and so got to know his story. And the reason, you know, people said, "Hey, Todd would be a good guy to talk with," is because of you had a major transforming experience. Who wouldn't have an experience? Who wouldn't feel those emotions over there? Yet, when you came back, you've actually had change in your life. Most of the time, people go to experience like that and say, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And 6 months later, life is exactly the way it was 7 months earlier.
Right.
But for you, you actually put some things in process, and there's some differences about you. So just coach us, the rest of us here. What is it that we need to know? What have you been experiencing since being back in normal America?
I think for us, before we left, we felt like we were chasing after Jesus, but we kind of compartmentalized our lives. Like, if Jesus fits into this part of our life, then that's awesome. But, you know, if I want to do something, Jesus will understand. So we kind of fit Jesus in where we wanted him. Since we've gotten back, I kind of explain it like, my end goal now is chasing after Jesus, and then however my life is going to form to that is the way my life's going to go, in terms of, you know, volunteering, in terms of financial giving. Before, we had tithed before, and I just, sometimes that's an uncomfortable topic. I think it's very important, and I would just challenge everybody just to kind of look at that. My wife and I started off tithing at 2%, and I didn't want to start tithing. I was like, there's no way I can
That's
give.
Called deucing, by the way.
Deucing. Yeah. We were working our way up, trying. That was the plan. Deucing. I won't go where I'm thinking. but it just, being over in India and getting to know people around here, like, the world does not change without financial support. And I kind of I don't know if that's kind of the right thing to say, but it doesn't. Like, without money, we can't go to India. We can't, you know, build an AIDS hospital in South Africa and fund it. I mean, the stuff that money does is what fuels. So for me, my challenge would just be, think about that. My wife and I started tithing. We went 2% 1 month, 4% the next, 6%. And then we were just like, once you get to that goal, we actually go above 10% just because it's freed us so much personally. It's kind of a neat little quote. Somebody told me, several people have told me, you can't free others until you're free yourself. And personal financial freedom is one of the most amazing things that we've discovered. And being able to help people and fund things that go on here to change the world is extremely important. So,
One other thing I think it'd be good to touch on is a lot of times people think, okay, I got to change careers, I got to come on staff at Crossroads, whatever. You guys are still in the sales world, and you see yourself being able to be who God wants you to be there.
Yep. I've always been kind of a career ladder kind of guy. And it's kind of funny because now I definitely spend a lot more time on Crossroads things than work. I used to live to work, and now I work to live kind of thing, where I sell mailing labels. It's the most boring job in the whole entire world. But it allows me the freedom and the flexibility to follow Jesus through justice work. And so it's not like you don't have to be on staff here to make a difference. You don't have to, you know, be a pastor or anything like that. It's just the normal everyday people like us are what's going to change the world.
Todd, I tell you, you've done this for four or five times. The run through yesterday, gave up your whole weekend. Phenomenal. Let's thank him. Utterly great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really. One of the SWAT groups, or we've had a number of people going over trying to figure out what's the next level of engagement in India for us. And some of the folks have gone over have been artists, partially to think through what could happen decoration in these facilities, also partially to figure out how this would affect their personal art and maybe the communication at Crossroads. And one of some of these artists started having a song birth in them. They talked to some of the girls and they said, what's beautiful for you? And girls were saying, well, the sun or some such thing. And one of the girls said, what's beautiful? And the girl said, I'm beautiful. And the seeming impossibility just struck them, because that's God's redemptive power right there. For a girl who's had those kind of things happen to say, no, I am beautiful. That communicates the good news, love, and grace of Jesus. I am beautiful. You know, there's so much talk about finding your purpose, finding meaning in your work, and do that. Go find purpose. Go find meaning. Let me just say this as encouragement, as a clarifying statement for all of us who are part of the team. You are changing the world. You are. You never have to wonder when you wake up in the morning, does my life matter? You never have to think that. I'm not in the front lines of India. I'm not in the front lines of South Africa. I'm not in the front lines of Kids Club, but I'm on the supply lines, and many of us from the supply lines or the front lines of all different kinds of things. That's what we're created for. And I just want to make a call out, Ryan. I want to say something that's very obvious to me, but not apparently obvious to the way we live our lives. The greatest thing you will ever be a part of on God's green earth is a local church. The greatest thing on God's green earth is when local church operates the way it's supposed to be. And unfortunately, for many of us, we get deluded into putting it like 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th on the priority list. What's happening here is way more important than anything that's happening in any corporation here in our city. It's way more important than any other civic organization. It's way more important than any other kind of pet project to actualize yourself. This is the very call of God on your life, to be a blessing, to be linked with people, to have a role, to have meaning by changing the world. It is the mandate on our lives as human beings and on the churches that God creates. So let's walk out of here, some of us motivated, some of us need to make a change, and many of us walking out of here being encouraged, being say, yes, that's why I park cars. Yes, that's why I tutor. Yes, that's why I support. That's why I give. That's why I go. That's why I love. I encourage you to stand right now. We're late today. If you need to take off, go ahead and take off. You can beat the rush, but rather of us, we're going to stand right now and we're going to make this song. a prayer, a declaration of us wanting to continue to see God's kingdom come in this world, operate the way it needs to, and us fulfilling our role as a team member, as a soldier. God, your people sing and say this to you.